The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Aubrey Merchant-Dest, Federal CTO, Blue Coat Systems. Aubrey, how are you today?
John, I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, it's a tough name for our listeners to figure out, but it's one of those hyphenated names, Merchant-Dest. And today we're going to talk about computer security and what in the world Blue Coat Systems can do to help our listeners. Before we begin, tell us about your interesting name, your background, and how you wound up working for Blue Coat Systems.
Well, thanks for spelling it out, John. I appreciate that, and it's great to be here today. So myself, you know, I started in data communications back in 1985, focusing on things like front-end processors, SDLC communications, statistical multiplexing, you know, just an interesting point. Back in the day, you know, a bit per second was worth about a dollar. So for a 9.6 modem, we're talking about $10,000 investment. So after moving from data communications, I moved into network engineering, focusing on local area network operating systems. Many of you might recall NetWare and 3Plus Open. Did that for a number of years and moved into IT management for a large trade association. After doing that for about 5 years, I was convinced to move into sales engineering, which since I've been working for manufacturers that are focusing on providing solutions around communications, remote access, security for enterprises, governments, and carriers.
So good, solid background. And you talked about 9.6. I remember 300 baud modems.
I remember those as well.
Yeah, those go a while back, don't they?
Indeed.
We got a birthday on the horizon, and it's not one of the Washington Redskins. It's not Bryce Harper, but it's the OPM breach. Happened about a year ago, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
So what kind of lessons have you learned for that, and how does Blue Coat fit into this whole ecosystem of cybersecurity?
So, you know, in the case of the OPM breach, I think there's a lot of lessons that were learned. And quite frankly, you know, I think if we've been paying more attention to the guidance that we're getting from NIST, the guidance that we're getting from DHS, you know, good potential for us to have avoided that. But at the end of the day, you know, understanding where your assets are, where that critical data is, you know, being able to monitor that effectively, do so in a way that is, you know, contextually meaningful to humans and machines, of course, but being able to detect specific anomalies that would, you know, essentially tip off that there might be something suspicious happening within a network, you know, could certainly have helped save the, you know, the untold millions of records that were breached by OPM.
You know, when you think of systems and you think of federal government and IoT and big data, all of a sudden you get all these different points of information that are bombarding our agencies, and it gets hard. I mean, one human being just can't sit and watch what's going on there. It's almost at the point, you know, we have to automate some of this. Is that where Blue Coat Systems fits in, or where does it fit in as far as monitoring these systems?
So, you know, the one thing I'd like you to know about Blue Coat Systems is that we provide a vast amount of visibility, right? So when I think about the, you know, the four core things that Blue Coat provides to our customers, I think about it in terms of visibility. Because we're able to, first of all, break into encrypted traffic so we can perform inspection and do so in a way that doesn't create any amount of repudiation. We offer solutions that provide deep packet inspection so that we can understand, you know, contextually what's happening on the network down to the session level, for instance. Being able to identify all the communications you may have had yourself in the, you know, the past week or the past hours, minutes. You know, who you communicated with, what applications did you utilize, what files were received and sent. And then there's a number of other things that we do, certainly around our core technology, which is our web proxy, that allows us to get very granular attribution about what's happening on the network. So you think about that, you know, sort of overall, and I'm just kind of, you know, scratching the surface where the portfolio is concerned or where a platform's concerned, really. We provide a tremendous amount of attribution that can then be, you know, utilized as a, you know, very detailed and you know, context-aware data lake that would allow analytic systems to mine that for interesting activity.
Well, you're way smarter than me, Aubrey. Let me try to boil it down for our normal listeners. So you got ransomware floating around the internet. All of a sudden, if you're an agency and you're managing a network, you could have encrypted traffic on your internet, well, can't you? So, and I would be very worried about that. And so that's why you want to be able to inspect what's going on there. I think that's what you guys do, is that this is another tool you can use for bad guys operating on your network. And they're already inside the firewalls, aren't they?
Absolutely. But it's not just, you know, one tool we're talking about, right? So again, sort of starting with the notion that we're providing visibility as sort of the first tenet, you know, any amount of encrypted traffic that's on your network is potentially too much if you don't understand what that traffic is doing, right? So being able to break it open and then being able to extract attributes from those flows, being able to understand whether or not there's any objects or artifacts or files, if you will, that are being transferred, you know, utilizing the SSL protocol, you can utilize our tools first to perform that break and inspect. Secondly, to be able to record the session level details about that interaction. Third, to be able to, you know, utilize, you know, that really as an orchestration layer to be able to do things for artifacts or objects that we've never seen before, right? So when we think about it from an orchestration standpoint with our proxy, you know, sort of at the core of that, consider that a proxy, at least for web traffic, is the only real way to quarantine interactions on the internet. So while you're stopping that flow, making a request on behalf of that end user, on behalf of that application, you have the ability then to perform a level of inspection that you really can't perform with, say, something like maybe even a next-gen firewall. So while you've got that session broken open, or while you're sitting in the middle of it, you can check the artifact to understand whether or not it's known to be malware. If it's something that hasn't been identified before, we orchestrate it such that we can run it against our content analysis system, which performs a static analysis to understand whether or not the code within that file is likely to be suspicious. If we don't determine anything at that point, then we could pass it off to our detonation platform and detonate that artifact against your environment, your operating systems, to be able to understand whether or not, you know, it is in fact trying to do something malicious. And once we learn that it is malicious, you know, we send that information back in our global intelligence cloud where all of our users can benefit from it. So it's really an orchestration platform that we provide to our government and our industry customers. And I guess since we're talking about the company, I need to say that, you know, Blue Coat Systems is utilized in 80% of the Fortune 1000.
Really?
Yes.
Boy, I would have lost that in Jeopardy. You would have scored that one real high, huh?
Indeed.
I keep thinking of just this one small aspect of it, of breaking and inspecting and seeing what the bad guys are doing. Because to tell you the truth, that would get me awful mad if someone in my network was subjected to ransomware or some of this traffic that's coming through. So I just picked out one small aspect of what Blue Coat does. That's mm-hmm. part of the whole package there. You talked about something called a next-gen firewall. Back when I had to study my certifications, I learned about ports and firewalls and everything else, that's and now right. there's software firewalls. So what's a next-gen firewall?
So, you know, maybe before we talk about a next-gen firewall, I just want to call out the fact that, you know, in the case of a proxy technology, you don't have to open any ports, right? So it's a closed environment, right? Mm-hmm. So we see a TCP or an HTTP call going out to the web, maybe even HTTPS call going out to the web. We have the ability to essentially quarantine that request while we do the inspection, both directions, right? So either outbound or inbound. So, you know, think about next-gen firewalls, you know, traditionally, as you said, you know, firewalls were based on ports and protocols. So I'm going to allow this IP address to talk to this, you know, to any other IP address on port 80 outbound, right? So that would be your web-based traffic. And, you know, depending on how you had your policy defined, you know, you could accept responses back from certain IP addresses. Maybe you could base that on geolocation or what have you. Really, next-generation firewalls go to another layer, performing some amount of what I would call shallow packet inspection, but performing the task of classifying the application. So now you can make a policy statement that says, you know, okay, I'm going to allow Facebook between these times, but I'm not going to allow users to upload information to Facebook. So you can have very granular policy control, but you know, I don't want to confuse that with a proxy capability. I certainly don't want to confuse proxy with a firewall either. These are two technologies that really complement one another.
Yeah, back in the day, I learned about RBAC, rule-based access control.
Yes.
So now you can dynamically assign rule bases based on all kinds of different rules, which I never thought of doing that years ago. You know, it's
absolutely
it's incredible.
Obviously, that's very important to our government customers, particularly in the DoD.
Yeah, we're going to have to take a break and come back and talk more about a topic that's floating around everywhere. It's literally floating in the cloud. It's moving to the cloud. And so if you're working for an agency now and you're taking a system and moving to the cloud, you're still responsible for the security of that system. And you can use whatever vendor you want, but the ultimate responsibility lies in the people at the agency who are managing that. And they have to make sure that the transition to the cloud is safe. And I think we're going to ask Aubrey here about how Blue Coat Systems can help them in that transition to the cloud. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Aubrey Merchant-Dest, Federal CTO, Blue Coat Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Aubrey Merchant-Dest, D-E-S-T, Federal CTO, Blue Coat Systems. Don't have to spell that one out. More information, you can go to bluecoat.com and find out what the company's all about. And that's why we have Aubrey in the studio. You know, Blue Coat's used with a lot of big companies, a lot of people in the Fortune 1000, and I don't know much about them, and I think my listeners don't know much about them, and every one of my listeners is interested in cybersecurity. I guarantee that, and probably half of my listeners are being forced to move to the cloud or having a system go to the cloud, and they have to worry about cybersecurity system in the cloud, and that's my toss to you, Aubrey. So let's say you're working out at interior or transportation or agriculture, and you're taking moving the system to the cloud. You're still responsible for security. How can Blue Coat Systems help me?
Well, there's a number of ways that we could help you. But before maybe I jump into that, let me give you just a little bit of background, a little bit more background on Blue Coat Systems, right? So we've been in business for almost 20 years.
Really? That's lost that. Two, I lost on Jeopardy.
It's okay. So we started out as cash flow. That morphed itself into a proxy capability. You know, we added the ability to essentially map the internet, if you will, at the link or the page level, right? So we understand things about what's going on at the internet vastly by essentially tracking the DNA of particular websites, particular IP addresses, as well as a large team of researchers that are essentially trawling the internet looking for malicious activity, understanding where it's coming from, and maintaining some sort of historic information about what those sites are doing. So being able to merge that intelligence into our core platform technology, not just the proxy capability that's really our core product, but also our security analytics platform, which, you know, is an incident response platform that also does, full packet capture. And, talk to folks that are in the IR space, they certainly understand the value of having those packets. But it really moves way beyond that and being able to provide you, again, the detailed context in a human-readable format that you can actually make sense out of. Being able to utilize that sort of intelligence that we get from classification as a feed to our encrypted traffic management solution for SSL visibility. So if you're looking to do SSL inspection, but you're worried about, whether or not you're going to step on any policies, we have the capability, based on the intelligence that we're gathering, to allow you to do things like bypass sites that are banking or healthcare related. So, and then there's a number of other platforms that we have developed, organically in-house through our own innovations, and certainly a number of acquisitions that we've made over the past 4 years. I don't want to throw too much in from a company standpoint, but just to understand that we're way more than a proxy.
The idea is that people don't understand your company, and they're going to get more details here. For example, a detail I want to know about is this funny new acronym called CASB. What is that? Cloud Access? Is that what you guys are? You work with them, or
so there is a big component that we provide that is in fact cloud access security brokerage. Some of that technology really is accomplished through recent acquisitions. So we picked up a company just about a year ago by the name of Elastica that does this CASB, which I'll explain what that is exactly. And we also made another acquisition just prior to that of a local company by the name of Perspexis. So Perspexis, essentially, we have renamed to Cloud Data Protection because a Perspexis capability, or CDP, essentially allows you to manage accessibility to your data while it's in the cloud, right? So say, for instance, for values that are sensitive or maybe of high value, certainly social security numbers, other things like that, we can essentially tokenize that information randomly, keep the data local on your prem where you can have the level of security that you need for it, and send a token into the cloud so that if someone were to breach your cloud application, they wouldn't have visibility on those sensitive fields. So the Elastica acquisition actually allows us to do some very, very interesting things. So you think about what it is that we have nowadays with, you know, our cell phones and tablets, for instance, and, you know, just how you do work, John. You know, maybe, you know, you are utilizing your tablet at home to, you know, access some applications here at Fed Radio. How do you know how those applications are interacting with others, right? So you've got an application in the cloud, you know, you've got this broad access, people can access it from anywhere, you know, scalable solution, lots of benefits going with cloud-based applications, certainly. But what's really important to understand, one, is how are your users, you know, interacting with those applications? And probably equally, if not more important, how is that cloud application interacting with other clouds, right? So you think about this notion of a micro-segmented application. So, you know, even though your application is being hosted by one service provider, there's a possibility that, you know, they are outsourcing some of the interactions with that application to another service provider. So when you think about that, you know, you start to wonder about, you know, how do you track and manage sort of the hygiene, if you will, of these different clouds, right? Because you're only as strong as your weakest link, I think we would all agree. Having this notion of a cloud access security broker in line provides you with the visibility and the reach back to be able to understand what's happening in those applications and control them. So not just managing what applications your users are utilizing. Consider that there is this notion of a sanctioned app, which is something that's, you know, allowable by your organization. And then there's this also notion of an unsanctioned app, right? Which is something that an end user might be utilizing to, you know, for appropriate purposes to increase their productivity. They like the way that tool works better than the tool that's provided in-house. So they're utilizing that somehow to get their job done. But, you know, there potentially is some risk with that application because of certain attributes that might be associated with it. Maybe that application does not utilize multi-factor authentication. Maybe it's, you know, created some exposure on the net that you wouldn't know otherwise. So having a cloud access security broker gives you, one, the visibility into what applications are being utilized. And then secondly, and probably equally important, is compliance and control, right? So of the sanctioned apps that are being utilized, are they being utilized properly? Is there any information being stored in those cloud applications that shouldn't be? So proper CASB solution would provide you with advanced level of data loss protection, not just being able to search for keywords, but being able to search for patterns or, you know, documents that are formatted a certain way and what have you. So it's really key in being able to maintain visibility and control while you're outsourcing those applications.
So where would your solution fit? Would it fit within one specific environment? It only works with open source, it works with Microsoft or IBM, or it has nothing to do with the applications themselves. Where would your application, where would the Blue Coat fit?
So you think about, you know, what we're talking about when we think about a CASB solution. You can really think about that as a forward proxy, right? So it fits somewhere in the cloud, you know, where it makes sense, depending on where you are geographically located. You essentially force that proxy configuration to that device, utilizing something like a mobile device manager, or maybe even, you know, group management capabilities within an Active Directory or Microsoft authentication solution. And basically force that device through your CASB solution to be able to get that visibility. The thing to understand, though, about the CASB is that while it's providing a lot of protection in line or in that forward proxy configuration, it also has the ability to do sort of an out-of-band communication via API calls for the protection capability. So you think about the DLP being able to understand what folks are storing in the cloud. That does not, you know, require us to be in line to do. It just requires essentially the, you know, API access to that sanctioned cloud application so that we can go in and perform that inspection and remediation.
There's all kinds of terms being floated around in the world of cybersecurity, and maybe you can give us insight, maybe a listener's insight in these three words. Some people call the OPM incident a breach. Someone calls it a hack. Someone calls it a cyber intrusion. Is there any subtleties? Is this a distinction without a difference, or what do these all terms mean?
That's a great question. You know, frankly, I haven't really considered that. In my mind, I kind of think of them all as the same thing. I mean, one thing it is for sure is unfortunate.
Right? So that's the common word, isn't it?
Indeed. You know, you think about the effect of, you know, 21 million folks that were, you know, compromised and their families. I mean, you know, you think about the long-term effects of that and, you know, also wondering what it is, you know, what will that information be ultimately used for? How's that going to manifest itself in the future?
Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about cybersecurity and the role of Blue Coat Systems. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Aubrey Merchant, Federal CTO, Blue Coat Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Aubrey Merchant, that's MERCHANT-DEST. He's the federal CTO for Blue Coat Systems. Don't have to spell that one out. That's easy. You can go to bluecoat.com for more information. It's not a fashion site. It's a site that deals in cybersecurity. You know, Aubrey, you give very articulate answers, very nuanced and subtle. And what? How do you keep up with all this? I mean, this is the field. I don't know. You could spend 10 hours a day reading and not even catch up. So what do you read to catch up? What can my listeners learn from you about just keeping up with cybersecurity?
You're right. You know, I mean, there's just so many sources of good information, relevant information that you know, provide some, I think, some key insights for us to sort of imagine where the problem is evolving to, you know, understanding how people are you know, taking different approaches and trying to solve this problem around cybersecurity. There's so many different sources that I read, quite frankly, but, you know, generally speaking, I'm obviously tracking those things that are related to the government. So GCN, FCW. Believe it or not, I spent a lot of time at Fed BizOps, you know, just to understand, you know, what sort of issues the government is sort of tracking, where the opportunities are coming from, what they're thinking about, certainly get some other insight. And there's a number of blog spots that I read, but I think, you know, dark reading, those types of venues I find to be very insightful. And certainly, you know, keeping up with things like Black Hat, RSA, and spending a lot of time with my research team internally.
Are conferences valuable to you? Does the RSA conference, for example, have any value to you? Or are you beyond that?
No, I'm certainly not beyond that. I think those things are very useful to get a sense of reality. You know, as much as I, let's put it this way, I'd much rather talk to a customer that's having an issue. But short of that, going to a conference to understand what's popular, you know, where things are trending, I think is very, very useful. In fact, you know, one of the key takeaways I took from RSA in the spring, you know, I kind of thought about this, been thinking about it this way, but there was actually someone, I can't remember the gentleman's name, I think he was from HP, but, you know, called out the fact that the application is the network, right? So when you think about it in those terms, you know, where years ago we were saying that the computer is a network, thinking about the application is the network, I think that's really a key way to look at this challenge that we're having. So, you know, being able to monitor the interactions of that application, understanding that the protocol exchanges are, you know, within proper conformance, utilizing some analytics capability to understand how users are accessing it and where they're accessing it from, whether that's on-prem or in the cloud, you need that sort of visibility.
My wife is a Latin teacher, so I get permission to use big fancy pants words. So the words I'm going to use is ingress and egress, okay? Enter and exit, especially of a network, you know?
Yes.
If I were managing a network, I would be very interested in ingress and who's coming in, who's leaving, what's going on in the network, mm-hmm. and obtaining as much network visibility as I can. Yeah. I would think it's right in your strike zone.
Well, I think certainly that's something that's in our strike zone and even something that we see coming from DHS, right? So we think about what they're doing with continuous diagnostics and monitoring. If we look at some of the recent task orders that are coming out, or the recent requirements, I should say, they're really now moving from just having that visibility or those controls at the network edge, if you will, down to the enclave level, right? So now we want to get deeper visibility to understand the interactions within our network. You know, I don't want to talk about insider threat necessarily, but, you know, if and when, I should probably just say when, somebody breaches your perimeter security, what you need to have is deep visibility within the network to understand, you know, what happened after that host was compromised? What other hosts did it communicate with? You know, where else might there be a footprint? So having that visibility at the network edge, as well as, you know, strategically placing your host devices within your infrastructure, so you limit the ingress and egress, as you said, utilizing those big words, getting that visibility, doing the analytics, understanding the interactions is very key. And absolutely, that's something that Blue Coat can provide.
The problem is that No one managing a network wants to pull a log and go through, talk about call suicide hotline. Mm-hmm. go through a log line by line, try to figure what's going on. It's got to be automated somehow. You have to apply analytics to it. And if we're talking big data now, all of a sudden then it's, okay, get another cup of coffee. And no human, I don't know how any human can even consider monitoring these networks. There's got to be ways to automate the system and automate what's going through the network to give you the visibility.
Absolutely. And, we see that same evolution, let's say, coming from DHS, right? So there was an RFI that we responded to recently, which essentially talked about orchestration, right? So we've got this log data coming from your network devices, your switches, your routers, your incident response tools. You've got log data coming from hosts, all of which are being presented in common format, being able to ingest that information, perform analytics on it, maybe even do some transforms on it as needed, enrich that data with, public threat data. Maybe we utilize information sharing, utilizing Styx and Taxi or something along those lines. But ultimately getting us that higher level of analytics so that we can, either through an alerting capability or somehow visually demonstrate that there is some anomalous behavior happening on the network, something happened today that we haven't seen before, being able to give the end user or the security operation personnel the proper tip, if you will, to be able to perform that investigation a little bit deeper. But in giving them that tip, giving them the tools to be able to very quickly dissect it to understand, is it actually something bad that needs to be escalated? That's where we excel today. And certainly, there's a lot of future for us around analytics, as I mentioned before.
I jokingly talked about Jeopardy and questions on Jeopardy, but I can imagine a question on Jeopardy, STLC. And I should get that answer, software development lifecycle. I've worked with enough software engineers to know that one. But there's life cycles that are involved with security as well. There's a full life cycle for security. Does that apply to your area as well?
It does. And, I think about what it is that NIST has done along with DHS and others. I have to say, I like the fact that I feel like my tax dollars are going to good use with those agencies. But in defining the risk management framework, I think this is something that's really key for us to minimally get to a baseline that our networks can be more secure than they are today. And I think, what that evolves to is being able to get sort of not just happening with not just get an idea or an understanding of what's happening at the agency level, but really understand what that looks like across multiple agencies, right? So being able to perform, a level of attribution that would allow us to know things such as, is this part of a campaign? And then ultimately, who's the threat actor that's coming after us?
Yeah, a whole life cycle there.
Exactly.
And I keep thinking of making transition and changes and moving to the cloud. If you have an application that's behind your on-prem and behind the firewall and happy and move to the cloud, they're going to interact differently in the cloud with other players. And this whole life cycle gets more and more important, doesn't it, of when is that going to be decommissioned and how it's going to interact? The life cycle itself seems to be important nowadays.
I absolutely agree with that. And, we talked a little bit about what it is that CASB technology can provide where that's concerned. I think that's going to be really key moving forward. I expect that to be a high growth area for the industry overall. But I also want to say, though, that, kind of getting back to this notion of the cloud, while it does present some risk, and certainly, FedRAMP is doing a lot, with DHS to make sure that we have the proper security controls around that framework. What we still want to be able to understand is, a higher level of attribution in such that, as folks are interacting with the cloud, how do we sort of fuse the different threat intelligence across these different cloud properties, if you will, so that we can get that bigger picture? But the point being that, moving data into the cloud, potentially gives us the opportunity to get better intelligence and visibility than we may have had when those applications were in-house. We'll see.
So they throw lemons at you, make lemonade. So actually move to the cloud can be an opportunity to increase security in some ways.
I think so.
That's an interesting concept. Maybe we'll take a break and talk more about that. I want to take a break and talk about risk indicators and maybe do a prediction from you on what's going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years in the year of cybersecurity in the federal government. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Aubrey Merchant-Dest, Federal CTO, Blue Coat Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this afternoon, we have Aubrey Merchant-Dest, M-E-R-C-H-A-N-T-D-E-S-T, Federal CTO from Blue Coat Systems. You can go to bluecoat.com and learn more about cybersecurity and being a cloud access security broker. And you can also go to Twitter and find out information. Is that right, Aubrey?
Absolutely. You can find us at BlueCoatFed.
That's good. And learn all kinds of information about what's going on with you folks, all kinds of news. And I had a daughter that just drove here from Seattle via Los Angeles, which doesn't make any sense at all.
A long way around.
Yeah, certainly. And I begged her. I said, look, all I want you to do is have a mechanic look at the car before you. All I want, I'll pay for it. Just have a mechanic look at it and make sure you can do this trip. Well, she arrived alive because I was worried about key risk indicators like tire wear and like maybe leaky hoses and things that didn't affect a 24-year-old even incidentally. So what are the key risk indicators for managing networks from your perspective? What should you look at? What are the things that pop up?
So there's a number of risk indicators, obviously. I mean, it depends on what it is that you're trying to protect. You know, again, you know, I mentioned NIST earlier, but just going back to the risk management framework, I mean, that's certainly the best place to start to be able to perform those assessments to understand what those risks are.
So back to NIST, N-I-S-T. I know those folks up there. I know Ron Ross and writing all those standards. It's a very difficult job he has. You know, what happens is I do these interviews, and then people see me at an event, and they grab me, and they go, hey, that guy Aubrey, you know, with that dash name? Yeah, he seemed real smart. Now, what kind of phone does he have? and so I've come up with a scientific question, quite a different set test of 10 questions to find out if my guests are, in fact, card-carrying nerds. And I'm going to subject you to this, Aubrey. So are you ready?
I guess so.
You better be. Okay. Now, do you have an Instagram account?
I do not.
That's not good. How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
I guess to be really transparent, I'll say I've purchased one in the last 5 years.
Well, that's not a good sign for being a nerd. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do not.
We know who's in the room today. Have you ever used Blab?
No.
Oh, that's a trending question. That's a tough one, too. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
Android, or do you want something more than that?
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
And what's the most popular app on that in the last 30 days?
Gosh, a number of things I've been using. There's an IoT app that I'll leave nameless that I've been utilizing for personal use. And certainly, I would say otherwise, you know, I'm utilizing it for work when I'm not in front of my laptop.
So we break into your house this evening. How many tablet devices do you see floating around there?
You're going to see two, but none of them are going to be the latest and greatest, per se.
You're not doing good in this nerdometer here thing. The nerd score is weak. When was your most recent post in the social network?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember. It's probably been about a month.
Oh, that's you're going down the tubes here, Aubrey. You're losing all your self-respect here. Finally, the last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was paper.
Yeah, you're going to have to find a new job here, buddy. You can't work in this world of cybersecurity.
Right.
You're not a nerd at all. You know, you're a normal. That's shocking.
I don't know. I think, you know, when you stop and think about cybersecurity, which is the topic that we've been discussing, you know, looking at all the, you know, the guidance and directives that are coming from the government, you know, has really got me to start thinking about how am I managing my digital exhaust, right? So while I don't do a lot of blog posting, I don't make a lot of comments on forums. You know, certainly I have things that are I'm very passionate about, but I limit the footprint out there on the net. And I think that's something worth considering. Maybe that's my generation only. Maybe it's because I'm involved in cybersecurity, but I think, you know, managing what information of Aubrey's is out there, short of having my own personal CASB, if you will, I think that's something that we should all be considering more.
You know, it's interesting. I had a woman who is a profiler, celebrity profiler in the studio. And I said, well, do you have a LinkedIn profile? She said, yes, I have several.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is kind of interesting. None her own.
Absolutely.
No picture of her anywhere in the internet. She refuses to have that. And she's very, very careful about that. So I guess maybe the more you know, the more you know. And maybe some people are being naive in here, but that's an interesting perspective.
Exhaust. It really is, actually. Yeah,
digital exhaust. Yeah, I never thought of that one.
You brought up something that I think about frequently. You know, if you think about the challenge that we have with cybersecurity today, you know, sort of how we had been approaching it years past. You know, we had this sort of hard shell and kind of the soft, chewy inside. Essentially, you know, utilizing policies based on what we know is bad, whether that's signatures that are your edge firewall, signatures that are running on your host, essentially being able to detect things and block them, but only those things, of course, that are known, right? So if you think about it, you know, we have graduated now, or we must graduate from being detectives into being profilers. So when you think about how we get to be profilers, I think then we have to ultimately start thinking about how can we get better analytics to be able to get those insights, to be able to, you know, stop these threats before they achieve their ultimate goal.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you look at the, you probably could go to Google Trends and look at that word analytics and see how it's trended in the last 10 years. And I'm wondering if that's a function of the overload on humans with so much information coming in, so many systems to manage. And now it's IoT, and now everyone's got a smartphone, everyone's got stuff at home, and everyone's got this. And it's got to the point where I just can't do it anymore. I got to get away from this manual drill and get a power drill, or I had to get away from this fan and get an air conditioning system, agreed, or get away from manually monitoring to come up with a system that can automate it somehow. And mm-hmm. I think that's the big challenge, is that what do you lose when you get away from that human input, from that human analytical ability, and just rely on machine analytics? There's got to be weakness in there too.
Well, surely. But, you know, again, the point that you make about essentially there being far too much noise, and you being in radio, I'm sure you understand signal to noise. We've got too much noise and not enough signal. I think that's where sort of this advanced machine learning and, you know, frankly, data science is going to help us get a little bit closer to that goal of being able to identify things earlier within the kill chain, if you will. So again, you know, what we're doing at Blue Coat, certainly, you know, exposing attributes and providing visibility across the board, whether that's dealing with encrypted traffic, with web traffic, with, you know, frankly, any IP-based traffic, being able to perform analysis in an orchestrated way to be able to understand things that are potentially malicious that we've never seen before, do that efficiently. That's really the goal of our company. And I must add as well, in talking about the analytics part, that having a platform that's open in that, you know, you have this API or this application programming interface, allowing you to interface, you know, the data that's available through, say, Blue Coat tools with data that's available from other tools, being able to make that connection between the endpoint and the network, and get better intelligence about not only how that threat got in, but what did it do once it got in. That's where we need to evolve to.
Now, earlier in the show, you talked about detonating code, and now you talk about a kill chain. Mm-hmm. So I would read between the lines here and say perhaps your company has been involved in interesting aspects of the federal government.
Certainly we have. You know, I mean, for the so I came to Blue Coat Systems over 3 years ago through the acquisition of Solera Networks. And that effectively
S-O-L-E-R-A, yeah.
Mm-hmm. S-O-L-E-R-A, yes. And that is, you know, straight up an incident response tool, network forensics. Tool that's highly valued by our computer network defenders. Why? Because it effectively consolidates a number of different tools or windows that they would otherwise need to correlate amongst. So being able to have that
automate that, right?
So you've got that central location that's aggregating all that information, not just from one site, but from multiple sites. You know, I can say that, you know, the Air Force is a big user of this capability. Being able to have that global visibility and to be able to utilize that capability to intelligently perform things like detonation, to get additional context around, you know, how is the site classified? What's the risk that's associated with this particular site? All that context that could be, you know, absorbed by certainly machines, you know, from security information event managers to log managers, and something that's easily readable by humans so that they can potentially detect something, you know, even before the machine is able to.
S-E-I-M, security, S-I-E-M, is that the acronym for that one? Yeah, that was on my list here. Didn't have time to ask that. I've got a long list of questions, including endpoint forensics, next-gen anti-malware. We haven't even begun the discussion of cybersecurity here. I hope my listeners got a better idea of what Blue Coat Systems is all about. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Aubrey Merchant-Dest, Federal CTO, Blue Coat Systems. Thank you, Aubrey.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.